You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the law office of Polsinelli in Washington, D.C. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Phil Fagan, Ann Spiegel, Tim Perrin, and Kristen Jones from the law firm of Polsinelli. And our guests today are Andrew Ting, Managing Director and General Counsel, Promontory Mortgage Path, followed by Caroline Davidson-Hood, General Counsel, the Air Conditioning, Heating, and Refrigeration Institute, Mary Jane Saunders, Vice President and General Counsel, Beer Institute, and Stephen Smithson, Vice President and General Counsel, Tech Law Holdings. Let's get to know our first guest, Andrew Ting, Managing Director and General Counsel of Promontory Mortgage Path. Andrew, what is Promontory Mortgage Path? What are you guys doing?
Promontory Mortgage Path makes it easier for people to buy homes. Our software is easy to use, helps people apply, and makes helps lenders make better decisions.
Cool. So where are you from originally?
I grew up in Canada and Orange County, California.
Uh-huh. So you moved. How young were you when you moved?
5 years old.
Uh-huh. And how many brothers and sisters do you have?
One older sister, seven years older.
And what was going on with you ages 8 to 14? What kind of stuff were you up to?
My main hobbies were playing the cello and kung fu.
Playing the cello and kung fu were your two main... That's interesting. All right, Philip, what are you thinking?
Well, kung fu and the cello seem to be individual activities. As a general counsel, you work with a team. Mm-hmm. Can you put the two together there?
Absolutely. You're right that kung fu and the cello are individual activities, taking a lot of discipline, practice, honing technique. But in orchestra, I play with a group. And at my company, I play with the management team in harmony, but also expressing my own point of view.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned early on you were a street musician. That's kind of a very entrepreneurial activity.
Absolutely.
Lawyers don't take risks very often.
Absolutely. So I'm an entertainer. I think part of being a cellist is not just playing alone, but playing for an audience and playing for people. And I think that drive for expression, expressing myself through music, through law, is important to who I am today.
Mm-hmm. Did you also mention earlier that you have some poetry in your blood as well?
I did. In high school, people asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. I said a poet. I still write novels, actually, today.
I'm wondering if that writing thing has anything to do with this law practice?
Absolutely. It's important to be able to know how to write, to persuade people, leave an impression on them.
Uh-huh. Kristen, what are you thinking?
I want to talk about your sister. You said she was 7 years older. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with her.
Sure. My sister and I are very close. We have very different personalities. She is type A, while the type B younger brother, kind of looking up to her, following in her footsteps. When I was little, for example, 17 years old, she took me to buy my first two suits from Academy Award Clothiers in Los Angeles. I still treasure those two suits. I still wear them when I have to.
And so how has your relationship with her maybe honed in on who you are today?
So I remember when I went to college, we were at Harvard College. She was actually my first boss. Our part-time job to put ourselves through college was at Harvard Business School in the IT help desk. And she taught me how to deal with difficult, aspiring businessmen, which is key to my success as a lawyer today,
customer service. Where are mom and dad from?
Mom and dad grew up in Malaysia. We're Malaysian Chinese. They were married, went to England after they were married, studied, and then moved to Canada.
How much of an impact does Malaysian Chinese have on you and your upbringing and so on?
So I very much enjoyed seeing Crazy Rich Asians 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of a homecoming. But you feel, growing up as a minority, you feel a little bit different. You feel you need to work a little bit harder to fit in. Mm-hmm. And I grew up always watching people from the outside and being sensitive. But I think it's ultimately made me a better leader because I understand trends. I watch people see who they are and what they take.
Wait a minute. You're the managing director and general counsel of Promontory Mortgage Path, and you're talking about the fact you played the cello, you wrote poetry, and that you're emotionally sensitive. Mm-hmm. And you think that stuff's made you better in your role as general counsel? I thought all you do is sue people. What are you talking about?
No lawsuits. I think it's important as a lawyer to be trusted by your clients, be somebody that people want to talk to. And to do that, you have to get them to emotionally trust you, be open to them. And once you have that emotional relationship, they listen to you, they seek your advice, and you're effective.
So you're comfortable telling everybody you're emotionally sensitive? Isn't that vulnerable and scary to tell everybody that, especially on the radio?
They put up with me. I think I'll do good work.
Uh-huh. And you think your sister may have had something to do with that and your parents' Malaysian background?
I grew up in a loving family. My parents always made clear, work hard, do your best, but we'll love you no matter what. And my sister was always a role model. She went to Harvard College. I followed her. She was always kind of grooming me as her younger brother.
That unconditional love, what's that have to do with who you are nowadays and your role as general counsel?
I think I'm fairly secure in who I am. A lot of my actions I take because I really want to do the right thing. I don't do them because of my ego. I always know that I'm loved by my family.
Wow. Let me have that again.
So a lot of folks who strive for success, I find, are motivated by insecurity, the desire to make more money, more power, etc. I do what I do because I love what I do. And
because you're comfortable in your own skin, you're comfortable with who you are.
And I think people find an easier time connecting to me because they know I am who I am.
Anne, what are you thinking?
So you had a number of different experiences that you focused on when you were younger, the cello, the kung fu, the poetry. What skills do you draw from those experiences that you bring to bear in your practice?
Sure. The ability to understand myself and express my thoughts and feelings. And at first blush, expressing your feelings through poetry seems very different than expressing a legal argument. However, I think there's a rational component to an argument and an emotional component to an argument. And finding someone who can put both halves together makes them more powerful.
Hmm. Tim, what are you thinking?
I'm still thinking that it's amazing Andrew can fit into suits that he had when he was 17. But that's another story for another time. I'm really fascinated with the your practice of kung fu, and you know, I see a lot of parallels with that in the legal profession. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. With kung fu, it's a solo discipline, but you have to practice it every day. If you don't, your muscles atrophy. You practice law every day. You have to keep learning, attending seminars, like I teach on the side at George Washington University Law School. And I think being a lawyer is a wonderful profession where you extend the breadth and depth of your discipline every day.
Philip, what else you think?
You talked a lot about your family. Are you more like your mother or your father, and why?
I think I get my mother's verbal side. And I also have a lot of my father's personality, so the best of both.
Uh-huh. What do you mean you have your father's personality? What are you talking about?
He's always been a quiet source of strength for the family, and that's how I aspire to be as a general counsel. I don't need to be the loudest, most flamboyant voice in the room, but I need to be somebody who people trust, who they're willing to seek counsel from.
Mm-hmm. And what else are you thinking?
I think of all of your experiences, if you had to pick one that was the most formative for you, what would you choose?
That's a good question. In my senior year in high school, I was elected prom king, which was very odd for me because I was fairly introverted, fairly shy, and I didn't particularly campaign for it. I was placed on the ballot and I won. And for me, it showed that you could be like a fairly shy, sensitive Chinese American guy, but you could win a popularity contest. I had never gone to a formal dance before. And so I got there, I got my cheesy crown. And I said, wow, you know, I can actually have the confidence to go out and be with people.
Wait a minute. How many kids were in your class for you to be elected the
About 400 in my senior class, 1,600 in my whole high school.
Did you have any competition winning that prom king title?
I think there were some boys who were very good at sports.
And you were able to, why do you think you ended up with that award?
I had won a number of academic awards, which made me a little bit more famous. But I think, despite all that, I had the reputation of just being a really nice guy.
A really nice guy. You had the academic. It sort of like fits your personality, where you know you want to be pleasant with everybody, and you know it's that emotional intelligence again, isn't it?
Maybe it's cultural. I try to get along with people.
What do you mean it's cultural? What are you talking about?
There's a Chinese proverb that says the nail that sticks out must be hammered down. And maybe it's also playing the cello, expressing myself in the cello, but as part of an orchestra, as part of a team. So I find I'm most effective not when I'm telling people what to do, but by exercising lateral influence. Legal teams are relatively small. You don't have a lot of direct reports. But I find if I get the respect of people and build relationships, I can be a lot more effective.
So you're not as opposed to demanding compliance, you're gaining commitment. You like to work with everybody.
Absolutely. So that they'll listen to me when I tell them you should do this.
So, but doesn't it take longer than just telling somebody to do something? You're an attorney. You could tell people to do things, no?
I try to invest in long-term relationships.
You try to invest in long-term relationships. And culturally, you think this is part of your background, huh?
That's right. I would say, as a leader, I'm not an alpha male. I'm more of a listener. I'm more of a watcher. And I'm not the person who needs to stand up in the conference room in front of everybody. I'm more the person who draws people out one-on-one afterwards.
You think your parents are surprised at your success?
My parents have always been great supporters of me. They never prescribed the path I would take, but I'm sure they're proud to listen to your show right now.
How about your sister? You think she's surprised?
My sister has always been a big supporter of me, too.
Huh. Does she know you wear that suit every so often? What's the website address of Promontory Mortgage Path?
We dress business casual.
And what's the website address?
MortgagePath.com.
Let me have that one more time.
MortgagePath.com.
Speaking with Andrew Ting, Managing Director and General Counsel, Promontory Mortgage Path, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Back in a minute, right after this break. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Caroline Davidson Hood. Caroline is General Counsel of the Air Conditioning, Heating, and Refrigeration Institute. Caroline, what is the Air Conditioning, Heating, and Refrigeration Institute? What are you guys doing?
The Air Conditioning, Heating, and Refrigeration Institute, or AHRI, is the trade association representing HVAC manufacturers. We have about 300 members that make heating, ventilation, air conditioning, and commercial refrigeration equipment and their components.
Uh-huh. Where are you from originally?
San Francisco, California.
San Francisco. And how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have two brothers and one sister.
Two brothers, one sister. And where were you in the pecking order?
I was third.
Third. And what happened when you were about 10 years old?
When I was about 10 years old, my parents got divorced. It was a very dramatic experience for me, and it changed my family dynamic significantly. We went from your standard two-parent, my dad worked, my mom didn't, tree-lined street, to two households, and it was just kind of a... It was kind of a mess.
Uh-huh. And what role did you take on as the third of four kids when mom and dad got divorced?
So my brother's 11 years older than I am, and he was pretty much out of the house at that point. He was at college. My sister is 11 months older than I am, and she was having a hard time. My brother's 4 years younger, and I was sort of the default responsible kid. My mother has referred to me as the alpha child. And so when I was 10, I sort of stepped into the breach and played parent to my other siblings.
Did somebody tell you to do that, or did you just assume that role?
No, I just assumed that role.
You just assumed that role. What's that have to do with your role nowadays as General Counsel of the Air Conditioning, Heating, and Refrigeration Institute?
So you know that feeling when you're in a group project in college and everybody sits around the table and they'll just look at each other and somebody has to step up and say something and do something?
Yeah.
I think I was born with that sense of obligation. So
and responsibility.
Yeah. So it triggered when I was 10, when I stepped up and started.
You're the go-to person. You're the one with the broad shoulders. Philip?
Yeah, you were telling us earlier, around your college years, you became a firefighter. Can you talk about what made you do that?
After college, I knew I had a couple of years to do some fun things before I went to law school. Law school was always in the plans. But I was living in Lake Tahoe, California, working at a ski resort. And the other major industry in the summertime in California, or in Lake Tahoe, is the Forest Service. So I applied and was lucky enough to get a spot on a hand crew out of Truckee, California.
What did you like about firefighting?
I was drawn to the physical aspect of it. I played sports in college.
Wait. What do you mean you were drawn to the physical aspect of it?
I like doing hard things.
Uh-huh. Kristen, what are you thinking? What do you got?
Let's talk a bit again about your sports. What sports did you play?
I played lacrosse in college and in high school.
What did you love about the sports teams?
I just think I fit well in that environment. I'm a team player. And I'm a social person, and I like the physical aspect of it. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what particular characteristic it is, but I feel most at home when I'm on some kind of a team. Even now, I run marathons and I train. My social life is essentially while I run in the mornings before work.
And how does that team atmosphere play into your team at the as a general counsel?
I think because I feel most comfortable in a social setting and on a team, it just naturally translates to working well with others, trying to understand their perspective, trying to get together as a group to accomplish a given goal. It's a give and take, compromise.
Anne?
So you've had some really physically challenging experiences being a firefighter and being an athlete and being a marathoner. How does that translate into being a lawyer?
I think I always knew that I was going to go to law school, and I'm a planner also. So I knew I had essentially 2 years before law school to do fun things. So that was why I did the ski resorts and the firefighting. But there is just an underlying work ethic that is required to do a challenging thing, whether it's physical or, you know, getting through law school, for example, was not easy, and it required daily hard work, and I definitely put in the time.
I'm wondering if there are particular skills that you took, aside from the teamwork, but skills from having those physical challenges that you bring to bear in your career.
Perseverance, high tolerance for pain. I think a consistent strain of positivity and always being able to see the end results and pursuing that end result with a positive attitude. I think that is probably what I took most from team sports, mm-hmm. was that your attitude determines your outlook. And if mm-hmm. you approach something with a positive perspective, then you were going to have a better time while you were achieving your goals.
Tim?
And I definitely take that mm-hmm. in a work context as well.
Tim?
Caroline, when we were talking earlier, you had mentioned when your parents got divorced that when you were in two sides of the family, you were often late to things. Why did that bother you?
So I mentioned that when my parents got divorced, we went from a very traditional, organized family to two households where now that I'm a parent, I understand that things fall through the cracks when you're trying to do it yourself. And I just found that incredibly frustrating, the lack of order and organization, and the fact that I didn't have anyone to help me because I was the one that was supposed to be the helper. So I think that I've taken that on as a sense of sort of my own personal mission.
Philip, what do you think of
that,
Philip?
Well, I'm thinking either as a parent or in your role and as a GC, are you ever late to things now?
Oh, yeah. I'm still late to things. But right. It's not just the lateness. The lateness is one example of not having a plan, not having an orderly system in place. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm never late, but I definitely, I think, have a deeper appreciation for order and organization.
Caroline, I got a question for you. Are you a mom?
Yes.
How many kids you got?
Two.
What's more difficult, being the general counsel or being a mom?
Being a mom.
Why?
It is all-encompassing.
What are you talking about?
You get to go home from work at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. At least this is definitely something that happened for me when I left the law firm and went in-house.
Earlier you told me that was okay when you were associate counsel. Now you're general the counsel. It's like... You got two jobs that are absorbing you, being the general counsel and also being a mom, but it sounds like the mom thing is with you constantly.
Sorry?
The mom thing is with you constantly.
Yeah. The mom thing is with you constantly, and I think that most working mothers and probably most working parents feel exactly that mm-hmm. way, that you know, you have essentially two full-time jobs. You don't get to dedicate yourself to just... your children, and you don't get to dedicate yourself to just your work. You have to do both, and you have to do both well. You don't have a choice.
Yeah, it sounds to me like whatever you do, you like to do well. It's one of the reasons, you know, there's this tear because you want to put 110% into being a mom and 110% into being, you know, doing your gig. You know, you want to do everything correctly. It sounds like what was going on when you were 10 and you took responsibility for the family. Well, what's the website address of this organization known as the Air Conditioning Heating and Refrigeration Institute. What's the website address there?
AHRINet.org.
Let me have that one more time.
AHRINet.org.
AHRINet.org. We've been speaking with Caroline Davidson Hood, General Counsel of the Air Conditioning, Heating, and Refrigeration Institute here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. That was excellent. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Mary Jane Saunders. Mary Jane Saunders is the Vice President and General Counsel of the Beer Institute. Mary Jane Saunders, what is the Beer Institute?
The Beer Institute is the second oldest trade association in the United States. We represent brewers, beer importers, and industry suppliers.
Ooh, that's pretty cool. Where are you originally from?
Well, I'm an Army brat, so I'm sort of from all over the place, but I claim Falls Church, Virginia as my home.
How many different schools did you go to prior to graduating high school?
Eight.
And how many brothers and sisters do you have?
Fewer than eight. Three brothers and one sister.
So, and where were you in the pecking order?
I am smack in the middle.
So you're the middle of five kids, and you moved to eight different schools prior to graduating high school. What was your role in the family?
Oh, I was the organizer.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, a massive five kids has to be organized. And
Didn't your mom do that stuff?
Oh, she did. Yeah. She definitely did. But there still needed to be additional organization.
Like, give me an example. What are you talking about?
We'd go on long car trips. I would organize where people sat, mostly because I wanted a particular seat myself.
So you know how to organize things. You're good at keeping all the balls up in the air and juggling and making sure people are doing what they're supposed to be doing and stuff like that.
Yes.
I understand. Anne, did you have a question there?
So you said you moved all the time and you went to eight different schools. How do you find acceptance at a new school when you're always the new kid?
Well, I was born extroverted, so that's an advantage. When I'd go to a new school, thinking about it, I would often seek out the kids who were left-handed, because I'm left-handed and we're a small universe. But sometimes you couldn't find a good group, and luckily I had those three brothers and sister.
Well, what was the benefit of having three brothers and a sister?
Well, you could always have your own group. You could always form your own game.
So how's the ability to meet people or not and having your own group? How's that affecting your business and relationships and the team?
Well, I know no stranger. So I'm always happy to find out about a person, figure out where they fit, and push people to do the best job they could possibly can.
I got it. Philip?
Yeah, being a military brat, your parents, I assume, were very hard on you?
I wouldn't say hard. I'd prefer disciplined.
Okay. And at what point did you realize you wanted to be a lawyer?
Well, like most kids, Atticus Finch was a huge influence on that decision, or the desire to be a lawyer. And then my desire got stronger when I was in high school, when I joined the debate team.
And talk about a little bit about how you did on the debate team.
I was captain of the debate team my senior year in high school. It was a varsity sport. Mm-hmm. And I lettered all 4 years in debate.
And was it a natural for you?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. And most people think it's because you are a natural talker. Actually, debate requires that you learn a subject and learn a subject really well and form clear thoughts and arguments. Mm-hmm. You can't just get up and bluster.
So how does somebody who's the captain of the debate team do well at the sweetheart dance?
Oh, well, I was pretty popular in high school.
Okay.
I was senior class president, and a bunch of my friends decided as a joke that I should be the queen of a dance because I was ridiculing the process. So they voted me in as queen of the sweetheart dance.
So you have all these titles, and you're at the top. When you're a general counsel, you're not the top person. How do you deal with that?
Well, first of all, I think it helps if you like being a lawyer, and I happen to really like the intellectual challenge of solving the problems and being the lawyer. and to help others in the organization get to the right solution, get to the right answer.
Mm-hmm. Kristen, what are you thinking?
What were some other hobbies or organizations you joined when you were in high school as you moved around?
Well, an organization that I was very active in throughout both elementary school, junior high, and high school was the Girl Scouts. I was a very active member of whatever Girl Scout troop was closest.
So Girl Scouts help you be prepared, right? So how does that training from Girl Scouts transcend to what you do as general counsel and preparedness?
In Girl Scouts, you earn badges. You earn badges by learning a subject or gaining a skill. And you had to really learn in order to earn the badge. There's always a test at the end of the day. And I apply the same thing in my work as general counsel. If I'm dealing with a tough issue, and a lot of the issues I deal with are technically complex because it's a highly regulated industry, I have to know that subject cold. And it could be anything from how beer is brewed or an aspect of brewing to how the tax laws work or how commodities are traded.
And you were talking about and being prepared and learning all these new skills that when you were younger, your mother encourage this. How did she do that?
Well, she did something that to this day I remember and appreciate. I am a reader, always have been a reader. And when I was younger, the librarian would not let me read every book in the library unless I had parental permission. So when I was in elementary school, my mother gave written permission for me to be able to check out any book in the library. And I read them all.
Mm-hmm. Anne, what are you thinking?
Between scouts and reading and debate, is there any one experience that you think has most shaped you into the type of lawyer that you are and the type of practice that you enjoy?
I have to say, in part, it was the experience growing up with a number of brothers and a sister, and also my parents' attitude, which was, you can do anything you want to do. You're just going to have to work hard to achieve it.
How'd you get that message?
Well, I knew from earliest age that I would go to college, which was not necessarily something that was automatic when I grew up. But I knew that that would happen, but I knew that it would require me to prove myself worthy of going to college and to prove myself worthy of any job I did. We were all encouraged to get jobs at an early age.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I babysat from the earliest age, and
How young were you when you started babysitting?
About 8.
Uh-huh. What was different about the way you babysat than the way most kids babysat?
I paid attention to the kids. Nothing was going to happen on my watch. Nobody was going to get hurt or lost. I also was a little cleaner when I was at other people's houses.
Mm-hmm.
I would clean up their kitchen.
So you're pretty thorough in terms of making sure that everybody's safe, which is certainly a personality trait of an attorney, and then also making sure that things are orderly. It goes back to your childhood. Things are clean. So I guess the parents would bring you, they'd hire you back again. You didn't lose too many customers, did you?
I did not.
Uh-huh. Tim, what are you thinking?
Well, I like hearing about that discipline, even in babysitting. As a parent, I always appreciate babysitters who clean up. But you said your parents were disciplined, but you also said when we were talking earlier that they allowed you to, you know, deal with the consequences of your actions. They didn't dictate everything. They allowed you to explore that freedom, but you had to deal with the consequences, right? So how have you applied that as a boss, and you know, is that a philosophy that you apply to get the most out of your employees?
I try. I actually have, in some ways, a hands-on and hands-off approach with people who report to me. I will give you responsibility. It is your responsibility to take care of an issue or handle something. But you have to be able to tell me what you've done. You have to be able to answer the questions and explain your successes, your failures. And above all, I expect you to be honest. If something didn't go right, tell me.
Wait. So if I'm working with you and something doesn't go right, you want me to tell you about it?
Absolutely.
Are you going to yell and scream at me?
probably not if you tell me. If you don't tell me and I find out later, then I'm going to yell and scream.
So basically what we're talking about is that you want to make sure that things are going in the right direction, but if I make a boo-boo, you're not going to fire me as long as I'm coming to you and saying, listen, I got a problem here.
Every mistake is a learning experience.
Huh. Do you have, how long have you been with the Beer Institute? How long have you been there?
A little more than 7 years.
And are there teammates you've had for a long time, you know?
Yes. It's a small organization. There are only 11 of us. But people tend to stay for a long period of time.
Yeah, because you're really building a team. It sounds like there's a real trust and intimacy amongst the team members.
Trust is incredibly important to me. If I trust you, I'll let you do anything.
Huh. So you really look to develop, through the course of time and responsibility, a real understanding of who's good at doing what, then you're just going to let them do it. You're going to let them rock and roll. What's the website address of this organization known as the Beer Institute?
Beerinstitute.org.
Let me have that one more time.
Beerinstitute.org.
And what's the best part of your day, real quick? Best part of your day?
The best part of my day as a lawyer is... Mm-hmm. That I have to think hard every single day.
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking with Mary Jane Saunders, Vice President and General Counsel of the Beer Institute here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. Learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break.
Yeah, you did it.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Stephen Smithson, who's Vice President and General Counsel of Tech Law Holdings. Stephen, what is Tech Law Holdings? What are you guys doing?
Tech Law Holdings is a group of environmental consultancies. It was started about 35 years ago by the lawyers who started the EPA. We do an awful lot of work with the government, with the EPA and the DOD. Mm-hmm. We also work with private parties on complex environmental sites where there's real uncertainty as to an appropriate environmental path forward. We help them find that path.
And where were you from originally?
From New Jersey, but I grew up in Kansas.
Uh-huh. How many brothers and sisters?
I have two younger sisters.
Two younger sisters. All right. Ann, what do you got?
You told us a really interesting story about learning to read and some time you spent in the elementary school library. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, sure. So I had a next-door neighbor, Lance, who used to read comics to me. And there's a few of us were all the same grade. I was the last one to learn how to read. And it really used to tick me off having my friend read to me. If I said, okay, I need to learn how to read. And so I didn't know what to read. I went into the library beginning of second grade, and I just started at the upper left-hand corner at the beginning of the Dewey Decimal System. And I just read all the books in order from left to right, top to bottom, around the library.
How old were you when that happened?
I would have been 7 or 8.
Oh, my gosh. You read the whole library.
I did.
Tim?
So you really went 0 to 60 with reading, huh?
Yeah. It opened up so many ideas. It just fascinated me, all the world you'd learn about.
Yeah, well, oftentimes people associate readers, people that spend a lot of time by themselves, they're introverted, but you had shared with us earlier that's not really who you were. You became more extroverted in running for elected office in school.
Yeah, so I was pretty quiet. I am still pretty quiet, but I was interested in kind of bigger things and trying to figure out a way to get there. And thought that if I ran for a class office when I was a sophomore in high school, that would help. And I was like, well, I'm not going to get elected. Nobody really knows who I am. So I came up with a plan. Approached these two girls, prettiest girls in our class, said, look, you two run for president, vice president. I'm going to put together a ticket. I'm going to run the campaign. I'm going to take care of everything. We're going to get elected. And they're like, okay. And so we got elected.
Wait a minute. So you masterminded a campaign. How old were you when you did this one?
14, I guess.
Oh, my gosh. When you put your mind to something, whether it's reading the whole library or winning an elected seat, you sort of, like, succeed at it, don't you? Philip, what are you thinking?
Well, I'm interested in your growing up, your relationship with your dad. Were you close?
Sometimes. I learned a lot of neat things from my dad. My father worked for a chemical company, and he used to bring home stuff from the office. We had a huge lab in our basement. He'd bring home stuff and said, look, we're going to figure out if this is dangerous or not. So he'd take it out in the back. We'd spray water on it, watch it explode or things like that. He taught me how to make fireworks. We made dynamite one time and blew up a tree. He still loves camping. He used to take me camping for like a month at a time each year. Got to see the country that way. It was so some really cool stuff.
Kristen, what was that? Didn't you have something about camping or whatever?
So you camped a lot with your family, and often it sounds like. Were there others that influenced you in camping, or were you usually with your family when you went?
Yeah, it was always with my family initially.
How many states did you visit by what age with your camping?
So I had camped in 46 U.S. states by the time I was 14.
All right. You camped in 46 states by the time you were 14. Who'd you do this with?
With my family. But I've continued it. I've camped in Mexico. I've camped in the Bahamas. I've camped in Canada.
What did you learn from camping? Does it anything to do with improving your law practice here? Your role is, says you're Vice President and General Counsel of Tech Law Holdings. What did you learn from camping? Does it anything to do with law?
Planning, first off. A good camping trip, a long camping trip. You got to figure out where you're going, what do you need. You always misplan something. And you got to figure out how to adjust, how to make do with what you have, or something broken, how to make something else work. You've got weather you didn't expect, whatever the conditions are, you've got to deal with it.
So you learn how to adjust it through the course of camping, and you're telling me that's sort of what you go through in your career as a lawyer?
There's no question. Yesterday I went into the office with a plan, and things went differently, and I spent the entire day doing something entirely different. It happens all the time.
Uh-huh. Philip, what else are you thinking?
So you talked about being interested in chemistry when you were younger, and you do a lot of camping. That doesn't sound like somebody who's going to law school and thinking about that.
No, I had no interest in being a lawyer, no plans of being a lawyer. I thought I'd be a doctor. I was doing medical research. Didn't really like that. I was sort of trying to figure out what I liked. I knew I liked the environment. I was working for an environmental group, and they wanted to run me for the state legislature in New Jersey. They said, go get a law degree, and we'll get you into the assembly. And that's how I wound up going to law school.
Did you ever run for the assembly?
I didn't. So when I was in law school, I wrote a paper, pretty technical paper, and I realized I didn't know as much of the science as I wanted to. So I went going back to graduate school after law school to do more science, and then became a practicing lawyer.
So you really enjoy the art of studying, don't you?
Yeah. I was just about 30 when I finally got a full-time job.
Uh-huh. But you also had this ability to mastermind stuff. Didn't you do something with the school board also?
I did, yeah. So my junior year of high school, a position opened up in the school board, and they didn't really have requirements that you had to be a grown-up to run for it. So I ran for the position, and I got elected. Which was a blast.
And how were you then? How old were you then?
I just turned 16. I was like a week into 16 when I joined the board.
Did your mom or dad help with that, or did you do that by yourself?
No, they were on doing their own things.
So when did they find out that you were on the school board?
When I came home and told them I'd won.
And were they surprised?
Yeah. I mean, you know, they knew I liked to try different things, though.
Yeah, I'd say it's like, you know, you certainly put your... You're like a strategic kind of guy, and when you put your mind to stuff, it happens. What's the website address?
Tech Law Holdings with an S. TechLawHoldings.com.
TechLawHoldings.com. And didn't you tell us something about the principal of the school when you were on the school board?
Yeah, so I was kind of a pain in the neck in high school. I liked to try to get away with stuff, and... Because I was on the school board and he sort of technically reported to the board, we had a little bit of a detente where I wouldn't necessarily give him too much trouble about the things he wanted to do, and he wouldn't give me too much trouble about the things I did.
Oh my gosh, the principal of the school reported to you. All right, we've been speaking with Stephen Smithson, Vice President and General Counsel of Tech Law Holdings, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Let's see. So I'd like to thank my co-host Phil Fagan and Spiegel. Tim Perrin and Kristen Jones from the law firm of Polsonelli for giving me hand structuring the questions, hopefully providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. We've had on the air today Andrew Ting, Managing Director and General Counsel of Promontory Mortgage Path, Caroline Davidson Hood, General Counsel of the Air Conditioning, Heating, and Refrigeration Institute, Mary Jane Saunders, Vice President and General Counsel of Beer Institute, and most recently, Stephen Smithson, Vice President and General Counsel of Tech Law Holdings. I'd like to thank our guests. And again, we'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Thank you for listening today. And do have a nice day. Bye-bye. Oh, we've nailed that. That's excellent. We did.